everybody. I'm Sonia. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, you guys. Welcome to the Valley Group speaker meeting. We have a real treat for you tonight. We have Erica from Tulare with 2 years of sobriety. So I got the chance to interview her before the meeting and kind of get to know her. And I asked her, how do you stay sober? Like, what is your secret to sobriety? And she said that she practices the steps, the steps of AA in everyday life. I asked her if she's hit any kind of roadblocks to recovery, because we all hit those at some point or another. And she said that coming to the realization that she was an alcoholic was pretty difficult, and she came to terms with that in rehab. I asked her if she had any advice to the newcomer, a newcomer that just walks in the door terrified and afraid, not sure what to do. She said, get a sponsor. I asked her how her family, she has her husband and her baby here tonight, asked her how they support her sobriety, because we all need that family and friend support. She said her husband encourages her program, they pray together, also being a mother helps her, and she takes time to herself to be spiritually fit for her family. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and welcome our speaker, Erica from Tulare with 2 years.
My name's Erica, and I'm an alcoholic. So I'm just unbearably nervous right now. So thank you guys for letting me be here. It's an honor to speak at a place like this, truly. I do have 2 years of sobriety. I'm coming up on my third. My sobriety date is 7/7/17. God bless me with that day. And I don't want to give it up. So I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. Her sponsor has a sponsor. Well, there's a lot of sponsors. So I am available to be a sponsor. I've gone through the 12 steps. When I met my sponsor, I heard her share, and I needed a sponsor. I was desperate for recovery. I had just gotten out of rehab a couple months before, and I was like a dry drunk, just going to meetings, trying to hold it together, and that's kind of what put the cherry on top of my recovery, per se, my recovery Sunday. Was just getting in contact with her and getting through the steps. Not just getting through, but going through. So I guess we'll start at the beginning from my childhood. I was a troublesome child. Basically just one of four kids, kind of lied a lot, liked to get attention. Being one of four was just like one of those things that you struggled for attention. So any like crazy, ridiculous thing I could do, I would do just, you know, to get my mom to pay attention to me, basically. I was a daddy's girl, and, you know, anytime one of my parents would upset me, I'd just go to the other one and cry about it. And, you know, I learned manipulation really, really soon on in my life. So going from there, we can just go to high school. In high school, it's when I started drinking for fun, I guess you would say. I didn't start drinking alcoholically until I was more college age. I started junior college. I didn't finish junior college. You know, I really couldn't put, like, any time of sobriety together to, like, do homework or anything that really mattered to me. It didn't matter to me, honestly. I thought, I'm going to work, and that's just what I'm going to do. You know, school's for fools or whatever. I don't know what I thought. So, progressing into my adulthood, I'm 21. I'm just going out, having a good time, not really making any life progress, not really achieving any goals, kind of just being stagnant. I end up getting, like, my own place, and I'm living on my own. I have some, like, failed relationships. What I thought when I was younger was, like, I would be married, have, like, a bunch of kids by now, and, like, a solid, you know, foundation in life. And that wasn't really happening for me. But I had wished it would. I didn't make any steps towards that. Like, you know, I was still drinking heavily, partying, just trying to live a good time life, and not really caring about trying to help my situation. So that's another thing in my drinking was I complained about a lot of things, and I didn't do a lot to help myself. I didn't realize how destructive that was until I was like 30 years old and, you know, needed to get sober. So I ended up meeting with customers I had from the job that I had after work, and we would drink, and after drinking I would eat dinner and I would go crash out and wake up the next day and do it all over again. Eventually on the weekends I started using other things that would progress my partying. So, you know, I could stay up till 3 or 4 in the morning on a Friday night and then go to work on Saturday and work for 4 hours and get through it. That was my life for like 6 years, I want to say. And things just got rough for me. You know, I ended up using drugs like habitually. Alcohol was like in the dust after that, and drugs were my new thing. That was like my new party, my new high. Stopped hanging out with my old drinking buddies, started hanging out with other kind of buddies. That life bled over heavily into my career. This one time I was at work and I went off for lunch, and I took an hour and a half for lunch because I fell asleep, and I got back to work and they were like, you know, you're like an hour late. And I was like, no, I'm not, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, it was rough. And I had customers that would come to me and, you know, I would just be not making a lot of sense, just talking. I had just like the most, I was cocky, you know, like I just did not think that anyone would notice. I thought I had it in the bag. Like, you know, my district manager would come. I would be like an hour late to work. She would come grill me, and I would just sit there with a straight face the whole time, like, what are you going to do type of thing. It was just nuts. I don't know what I was thinking. You know, it was insane. So it got to the point where I lost my job. I got fired from my job. I'd already been to rehab once. I failed miserably. I decided after 30 days I didn't need any more rehab, that I was fully recovered. I remember thinking in rehab, like, I'm never going to use again. Like, this is cool, you know, this is a good life. I had no thoughts on, like, starting steps. I had no thoughts on even going to really any meetings or getting a sponsor. That, like, didn't mean anything to me. It was like a foreign idea. So, I end up getting out of rehab, coming home. 4 days later, I'm drinking, I'm getting high, doing the same thing I was doing before that. My mom to this day will tell me things that I had told her. Like when I started my OP, my outpatient, I had told her that I was getting high again because I found a roach in my garage, which was just the biggest lie, you know, as if it was her fault that she didn't go through all my shit enough to like get rid of everything. And, you know, I was just like, you know, this is kind of your fault. Like, I don't know what to say. She tells me that today and I'm like, I never said that. And she's like, yeah, you did. I'm like, oh shoot, I'm sorry. You know, things that I don't even remember. I can't, it's sad because you don't remember the lies. That's the weird thing, is it's not the truth, so you don't remember it. So after losing my job, I went on for another 2 years. One of them, I was still living in my home, like spending all the money I had saved up, like savings bonds. I was just like every outlet I could, you know, extend. So I ended up having to sell the house I bought, my first house that I saved up for my whole like young adulthood. Also blowing through all that money. It took me like maybe 6 months. Drugs, hotels, that type of thing. So after that, I was homeless. I had a car, and I was homeless. So then I was just living with random people, whoever I could live with, whoever I could do drugs with. It was a horrible time in my life. That's the honest truth. It's hard for me to talk about because I was so far from the person that I am. My own father would tell me constantly, like, you've changed, like, you're different. And I would tell him, I don't understand what you mean. like, I don't get what you're saying. You know, in my head, I was just going through a hard time in life or something. I mean, I knew what the source was. It was drugs. You know what I mean? I was addicted to drugs. I was addicted to alcohol. I was addicted to the feel good, the change. And I just couldn't admit it to myself. It was like, you know, everybody else, someone stole my phone. I can't get a job because I don't have gas. He's like, here's 20 bucks. I'm like, I'm going to buy a pack of cigarettes and some gas, you know, like, but the expensive cigarettes, like the $10 ones. I had no common sense at this time. And I really can't explain it besides the fact that I have a disease called alcoholism. Once I start drinking, once I start using, there is no reasoning. Nothing makes sense that I do. You know, I'm like, oh, you need my car? Here's my car. Go ahead and go wreck it into something. We'll be friends later, though, because you have something that I want. You know, that type of thing. And I can only blame myself for that. I can't blame anybody else. You know, I am a strong, independent woman, and during this time, I was dependent on drugs, which meant, like, anybody who had drugs, I was dependent on them, and it just brings out the worst weakness in a person, in me specifically. So I end up, like, hitting this, like, horrible low where I'm, like, living with a dude that's, like, beating me up, and I'm just, like, there for drugs and yada yada. My parents won't talk to me. Everyone thinks I'm dead or crazy or whatever, and I am dead inside, crazy as well. I just borrow a friend's car, go to my aunt's house, and plead and beg her to send me to rehab. And that was July 7th, 2017. And it was like the scariest and like most relieving thing I've ever done in my life. Like, as soon as she said yes, I was like, thank God. Like, I started crying. You know, I'm like there with some like old school alcoholics that do a 12-step call on me, and they're all just looking at me like, oh man, she's a mess, you know, because I was a complete mess. So I go into PAR, which is in Porterville. I stay there for 4 months, and I do a lot of self-reflection, and I get a sponsor who's, like, way older than me. And she's a really cool lady. She sponsored a lot of people. And she just goes through the steps with me, like, very basically. We're, like, reading out of the big book, and she's, like, you know, just asking me questions. I'm answering them. She's like, that's step one. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, all right. A big part of my story is even committing to a life of sobriety. That was, like, something that I just had to make a decision on early on in my recovery while I was still at PAR. It was like, am I going to take this seriously? Do I want better things for my life? Can I go back to where I was? Like, do I have that in me? And the answer was no. Like, I don't have another run in me. I truly believe if I were to drink or use again, it would end in death. Because I just wanted to die. I wanted to die for lots of days in my using and drinking. It was rough. Like, there were times where I just wished, like, can I just get cancer and just, like, be done with this? You know what I mean? Can something bad just happen so I could just be done with this? And little did I know that the answers were there. I just had to accept them. So that commitment to sobriety was the biggest thing for me. I am a true alcoholic. So, you know, from day one, me drinking would just lead to, like, a long path of just destructive, horrible things. So after that, I really had to do some soul searching and find my higher power and not distinguish who he is, but just accept that there is one, that I'm not fully, I mean, I am responsible for the things I did. But I have to believe that God has a plan for me. I can't just sit there and think that, you know, I wasted my life and now it's done and over with. Because if I were to get on that thought process, what's the point, really? I had to believe in something bigger than me and someone who loved me enough to get me through this. Rehab was even tough for me because then that's all the memories of the things that I did. It's like come flooding back into me. And I just remember everything, my insanity, burning people, the way I acted towards my parents, horrible things I said. It was just a rough time. Anyways, moving past that, I get out of rehab and I move to Arkansas because I'm like way too afraid to even step foot in California and like show my face. I'm embarrassed of the person I was. And I just can't handle it. So I moved to Arkansas, and there's absolutely no recovery there. I don't know if anyone's been to Arkansas, but there like are no meetings. You have to drive for like an hour to get to a meeting. It was rough. I just started working and like busting my ass and saving up money to come home. So I come back home and I just like own up to it. I show up to like family events, I rub shoulders with my relatives. They're all like, oh God, what's going to happen next? But I just stuck with it. You know what I mean? Like I just steadily stuck with like showing my face places. And, like, when I see people, I just don't hide from them anymore. I'm like, hey, yeah, I'm not crazy anymore. Hey, maybe we could hang out sometime. You know, I'm still running into old friends. Like, my fiance and I were at Target, and one of my old drinking buddies came up and was like, oh, my God, you know. And I'm, like, you know, that, like, crazy drug girl that was, you know, all messy. So now that I'm in recovery, I have this baby and stuff, people, they want to see me doing well, and that's the reality of things. People want to see you doing well. I remember thinking a lot, like, oh, people don't care about me. They want to see me struggle, blah, blah. Like, that's just not true. I mean, people, I have to believe a lot of people are good inside. So I'm in California. I meet my sponsor. I get a job at Home Depot, and I'm here today. And so I guess I'll get to the steps and what they did for me in my life. Step four was huge for me. At first, I was like, I don't have any resentments. There's a bottle on the floor. Use the bottle. And my sponsor was like, this is being recorded. So we're talking about resentments. I talk to my sponsor. I tell her I don't have any resentments. You know, everything was my fault, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, I mean, you can't not have resentments. She tells me, that's you, like, living a lie. It doesn't really go with your feelings. There has to be something, some part of your using that you feel like someone did you wrong. And that's the truth. I felt a lot of hurt and pain, just like this baby. So much hurt and pain. And that was really like a big thing for me, was my resentments. Like, I needed to get them down on paper and I needed to be done with them. You know, so I came out with, you know, well, yeah, my mom did hurt my feelings. She rejected me. She made me feel small, you know, this, that, the other. Doing the fifth step, telling her everything that was on my resentment, seeing my own part in it. I mean, if you're having an interaction with someone and it, you know, is going south, you're always going to have a part in it. I mean, you can sit there and be like, oh, she's blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, truth is, you know, everyone has a side in things. So, moving on, I think another big thing was my character defects. Identifying those, it's hard to say what your character defects are when you are yourself. You're like, I'm cool. Like, who doesn't like me? Lots of people don't like me. But recognizing those things and then, like, leaving them where they lie. Like, praying to God, asking for Him to take them away from you. And being ready to let go of them. I had a lot of character defects that worked for me. We were talking about manipulation. That's one of them. That works for me, you know, manipulation. It's not good, though. So then we're going to get into amends. In my amends, that was like one of the roughest times in my 12-step process, making a list of people I had harmed and basically approaching them. I didn't even get to make all my amends. I got kind of shut down by some of my relatives, which I'm still working on. One day we'll get there. And I truly believe that. I have to believe that. talking to my mom, making amends to her, was rough. I cried through the whole thing. Still cry about it today. She kept the letter. I don't know if it's for, like, so she can blackmail me later or bring it up, but I want to believe it's for good. My dad was another hard one. He didn't want to keep my letter. I know that it was rough for him because he actually had a lot of interactions with me while I was not sane. So where my mom would just block me out and not talk to me, my dad would entertain some of the wild ideas that I had and some of the crazy things I said to him. And I hurt his feelings a lot. And I know that. You know, sometimes I feel like he looks at me and he's like, do you remember what happened? And I do. But I just can't live there. So I just choose to apologize for it and move past it. So 10 and 11 are big for me. I have an amazing fiance. I mean, he's not perfect. Nobody is. But he prays with me. He does, like, the things that... like, if you think, like, you know, you want to do these, like, romantic things, but you're, like, embarrassed or, like, afraid that someone's going to reject you, like, he does those things with me, and he's, like, proud of it. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to just, like, sit there and act like, oh, I don't know about this in front of other people. Like, he'll just straight up be like, I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, like, the big book, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he runs a strong program, you know, like, he's the type of guy that, like, does a 10-step every night. He's amazing, and he really pushes me towards better things, and that's the truth. So, where are we at? I mean, I don't know that there's much more to say. I would like to start sponsoring people. That's a God thing. And I just have to believe that'll happen in its own time. But I truly believe when you're taking someone else through the steps, I mean, you're going over the steps, you're revisiting the steps, it means something to you just like it does to someone else. So hopefully that happens for me. And I just want to say thank you. And I'm kind of wrapping up a little bit early. But I don't have much else to say.
Does anyone have any questions?
Questions? October 26th. He's 3 months. Oh, yeah, totally. Just don't drop him.
Yeah. Did your parents love you now? Did he love you now?
I believe that they loved me the whole time.
Oh,
I just wasn't very lovable.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thank you for the question, though. Yes, Brett.
Congratulations on your
thank you.
I know you were wrong, but I'm curious how you do your prayers together. That's really special.
Mm-hmm.
Do you try to run each other's
program? Absolutely not. In the beginning, it was a little rough because he is so stringent, and he needs that in his life. And I'm more like laissez-faire, like, let live. And, you know, I'm going to do it how I do it. So in the beginning, he was kind of like weirded out, like, why can you do this and I can't? He's also very competitive. So, like, you know, he wants to be, like, better than me at stuff. And so I think through prayer and meditation, he came through to the realization that we're just totally different people.
The reason why I ask that question is there's a lot of people that I know here that are dealing with resistance to recovery, and they tend to try to run each other's program, and it never works.
It doesn't.
And I'm going to elaborate on that.
Yeah. And you know what? In the beginning, it was interesting, too, because he used to really, like, want to talk with me about AA, and I would just be like, oh, God, not again. And you know what's weird is that, like, now I just love it. Like, it's kind of sounds so corny to say that, but it's the truth. You know, like, I ask him for advice, and he gives me... he truly tells me how he feels. He's not afraid to just tell me how he feels. Yes.
I've been talking to people recently because I've been struggling with accepting the good things and being good and liking myself.
Yeah.
And things that I have gotten from inappropriate.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned in the past, I didn't hit like yourself. And I did. I embraced that. And I grew to love. Yeah, even though I hated myself, I grew to love. Like the dog and told him to march straight my way up to the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shit, prisoner, whatever it was. How do you find accepting the good things that come from you, probably, that you get back to your counsel,
I'm completely rely on my higher power for that kind of stuff because, I mean, ultimately, you're deserving of love. I'm deserving of love. You know, and then also my sponsor. So, you know, we went through this, like, telling her my deepest, darkest secrets, the things I've done in the past that I'm ashamed of, and her relating to me, telling me about her own experiences, and basically helping me see that I'm not a horrible person. Thank you for that question, though.
I can't see you, Jim. I'm really important. You'll see. I struggle daily with people sometimes that tend to be less than, you know, nice and polite. What do you do on in those moments where people seem abrasive or demeaning to you? Because I find they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, except in these rooms.
I had that today. I had to deal with that today, actually. Robert and I are looking for an apartment, and unfortunately, while I was in my addiction, I got evicted from somewhere. So that stays with you. And it's really hard for us right now to find a place to live. And I had talked to the owner. Anyways, long story short, I just take it for what it is and pray about it, because what else can I do? I mean, I'm not going to lower myself to his level, and I'm try my hardest not to let things bother me. Because who's that hurting? That's hurting me, you know. And I talked to my sponsor and my fiance about it. And that's, like, something I need, is, like, to get things off my chest when things are really bad, like, at their worst. I have to say it out loud and let it go. I don't know if that's a good... I'm trying to answer these questions. These are deep questions, and I appreciate them. Thank you.
What's the meaning of life, Tom?
I'm all well. I want to get into that one.
You said when you were working your ninth, that was like the roughest time for you in your recovery.
Yeah, it was.
What was it like? What did you cling on to the most? Besides, like, maybe a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
What helped you get through that?
I'm going to say this again, prayer and meditation. I tend to turn inward for things at times. I'm not the most... you know, it really has to bother me for me to vocalize things, because I have a lot of pride issues. You know what I mean? I'm like, I can't tell these people my issues because I don't want them to think I'm not as cool as they are, or whatever, if that makes sense at all. It's hard. A lot of times at meetings, I don't even really share on a deep level because of that reason exactly. And it comes out real fake and false and shitty. So at that time in my life, I knew I wanted my amends to sound as genuine as I could and not just like a don't be mad at me type of thing. I wanted it to serve the purpose that it's there for. I got some really good advice from my sponsor, and luckily she's strong spiritually, and she has a lot of, like, she knows herself, and so that helps me know myself at the same time, just kind of hearing her thought processes and then relating to that. You know, my first sponsor was not so much that way. Like, I would talk to her about things, and she'd want to just give me her advice. You know what I mean? And so with this, it's like you know, something I can relate to more is like a, well, what do you think? You know, because truly I'm going to go with what I think. That's the, I mean, I might be asking you a question, but honestly, am I going to take your advice? Probably not. I mean, that's just, I'm more just like want you to validate me, and that's just how it is. So I think a lot of people are that way. Yeah. So thank you for that question. Oh, that was a good one. Hope I answered it. Thank you. Thanks. He was pretty cool. Yes.
What was the, like, the worst thing, like, the thing that meant the most to you that you lost in your addiction, and what was, like, the best thing you had gotten so far?
The worst thing I lost were definitely relationships. I mean, everything else was like whatever. Dogs, two dogs ran away. Even at that point in my life, my dogs ran away. That was a rough day for me. I was just like, that's it. My life's over. Like, I can't even hold on to dogs, you know? I could sit here and act like it was like my credit and, you know, whatever, but truthfully, I have horrible credit. It was, you know, my favorite aunt still really doesn't like to talk to me very much. And like, it's, you know what I mean? It's like a painful relationship, but like I said, I just have to believe that one day she'll come around or I will, someone will, something.
My name is Brett. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brett.
I enjoyed your story.
Thank you.
I've been sober for a twice now for 10 years and now 4 years. But when I got sober, I was able to be sober through my mother's passing and her death.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it took, do you feel the inner strength in you?
I, yes, completely. There are people who have lifted me up in this program. I am really bad at taking compliments. I'm super sarcastic. This program has really showed me that people truly do care. I mean, there aren't too many people here that are like trying to hang out with you because you have a cool car or something. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to walk up to you. They're going to offer you rides. They're going to do what they can for you because that's just how you do. That's what you do around here. So young people actually was like a huge thing as far as just going and then feeling accepted by a bunch of young people, which is not like a normal thing. Like, usually it's like a lot of shitty, catty girls and like you're trying to impress guys or something. But I can say there's a lot of love and acceptance in the rooms of AA in general. Yes.
Hello.
Hey, Dan.
Hey. Are you sponsoring anybody right now?
I'm not.
Are you looking to sponsor
people? Yes, I totally. I'm into it. Thanks for that question. That's funny. Thank you guys for letting me share. This has been a good, I was super scared to do this, like terrified, so I really appreciate it.